And welcome back to Current State. It's a live music Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. Our special guest today, Mary Flower, who is a Portland, Oregon-based acoustic blues guitar player and singer, and she is going to be, she's burning the candle at both ends. She's joining us here in the morning, and she will be performing again this evening at the Michigan Blues Fest in Old Town Lansing. Mary's going to perform a Muddy Waters song. This is Hard Day Blues.
Thanks, Mark. Had some hard days out in the pouring rain. Yeah, hard days out in the pouring rain. I didn't have nobody, now ain't that a crying shame? Yeah, hard days, didn't have no place to go. Hard days, didn't have no place to go. That man I was loving put me out in the ice and snow. Hard days, didn't even have a dime. Yeah, hard days, said didn't even have a dime. You know I had the blues, could not be satisfied.
Mary Flower performing Hard Day Blues by Muddy Waters here live on WKAR's Current State on a Live Music Friday. Mary performs this evening at 6 at the Michigan Blues Fest in Old Town Lansing. Mary's renowned for her finger style and lap slide guitar playing, in case that wasn't apparent in the song here. And she's performed on Prairie Home Companion to boot, and runs a guitar camp in Oregon. How great is that? I'm halfway there. That sounds like fun. We'll learn more about Mary Flower and hear a lot more music, more importantly, here, coming up in just a little bit on WKAR's Current State. If you've ever been a victim of a crime, you may have very strong thoughts on the criminal justice system. Current State's Brooke Allen says that a recent nationwide survey about those attitudes surprised a lot of people. Who did this survey, Brooke?
Well, Mark, the survey was conducted by the Alliance for Safety and Justice, and it discovered two things. One, victims of crime are often wondering where to turn for help in their recovery efforts, whether it be the need to relocate or therapy. And the survey also discovered that despite the popular assumption that victims want long prison sentences, Lenore Anderson, the president of the Alliance for Safety and Justice, says the study revealed quite the opposite.
We found that the majority of crime victims prefer a criminal justice system that focuses on rehabilitation over punishment by a 2-to-1 margin. We also found that 61% of crime victims prefer shorter prison sentences and more spending on prevention over long prison sentences. So this is, you know, pretty different than what many people would think about who crime victims are and what they want to see.
Of course, because we've all heard the phrase, lock them up and throw away the key, so that's not actually true.
No, in fact, by a margin of nearly 3-1, most crime victims believe that time in prison makes people more likely to commit another crime rather than less likely. And it's important to point out that these are views that hold true across demographic groups. Wide support for rehabilitation over punishment from victims of all walks of life. Pretty much across the board, what we hear is that the vast majority of victims prefer investments into things like education, mental health treatment, crime prevention, over and above long prison sentences and more prison building.
So, Lenore, let me ask you this. Were these victims of nonviolent crimes or violent crimes, or was it a mix?
You know, this was what was even more powerful, was that support for reform and a new approach to safety is strong even among victims of violent crimes. We surveyed a diverse cross-section of crime victims, both those who had experienced things like property crime all the way to people who had been victims of assault themselves and or lost a family member to violence. And regardless of the type of crime that people experienced, majority support this new approach to safety and justice that puts more emphasis on rehabilitation over punishment.
Okay, so we do hear time and again that the criminal justice system lacking on many levels, one for the inmates who, of course, are suffering sometimes or most oftentimes, it seems, from maybe mental health issues and addiction. What about the victims of the crimes? Who's actually responsible to see that victims of crimes get the help that they need?
You know, and it's a great question, because the other kind of groundbreaking information that we found in this study, in addition to the fact that most crime victims want a new direction in criminal justice policy, we also found that most crime victims don't actually get help to recover from the incident of crime that they experienced and to get back on their feet. And this should really be a wake-up call for our criminal justice system. The majority of crime victims are not able to access basic things like relocation assistance or economic recovery assistance, trauma recovery help, mental health counseling, anything like that. And what that means is if you experience crime and violence, that ongoing trauma can have very, very long-term impacts on your life. And so, you know, the results of this survey in many ways kind of point to a bit of a blueprint about where we could go with criminal justice reform. You know, in addition to reducing over-incarceration and putting that money into crime prevention and rehabilitation, we also need to do a lot more to reach out to vulnerable victims and get them the help they need to get on their feet.
What was the overriding need that victims say that they have?
Economic recovery assistance. The financial impact of crime and violence on individual victims is very serious. Many states have victim services that provide compensation, but too few victims are able to access that. And there needs to be a real concerted effort to make sure that we're getting the available help to our vulnerable community members. I think that's one of the big lessons that we learned. The other thing, just going back to the sort of overall picture here of a gap between where the public safety policies are and where victims want them to be. One of the reasons that this is so important right now is because, Michigan, as well as the entire country, is in the midst of a conversation around rethinking criminal justice policy. This is a country where for far too long lawmakers have been pressured to be very careful about criminal justice reform. The notion that prison building and tough sentences is popular with the public has really been driving criminal justice policy for literally decades. This survey kind of wipes out those misperceptions. Not only about where the general public may be, but importantly about where victims are. And so, in this moment of attention, lawmakers of all stripes are rethinking their prison budgets, looking for ways to dial back on this kind of mass incarceration that's erupted across the country. And in this moment of rethinking, there's really never been a more important time to ask the question, who are crime victims and what do they want to see? And, you know, what we found is that there's a gap, and what they actually want to see is smart justice.
And Michigan is one of the ASJ's key focus states. So where did you see Michigan fall on the nationwide scale of prison population and even helping its victims of crime?
So Michigan is a really important state on this issue. Michigan has the ninth largest prison population in the United States. The population has grown quite a bit. Michigan incarcerates nearly three times as many people today than it did back in 1980. And that increase in incarceration in Michigan has been coupled with a significant increase in prison spending. So, you know, corrections spending in Michigan grew by more than 200% from 1985 to 2014. And you can compare that, you know, when you look at the public budget, right, the budget of the state, that's a pie where if one part of the pie grows, another part of the pie is getting cut. And what we see in Michigan is that over 200% increase in prison spending was coupled with spending on a decline in education spending by nearly 50% over that same time. And this is a critical red flag for how we're thinking about safety in our community.
And the Alliance is partnering with Citizens Alliance on prisons and public spending in Michigan. So what impact do you think this combination could possibly have on Michigan's criminal justice system?
We think that there's a lot of opportunity for justice reform in Michigan. It's been a state that has shown forward-thinking leadership in a variety of areas, and there's a big opportunity around parole reform in Michigan, and there's also a real big opportunity to start investing in trauma recovery services for victims at the local level. That combination of shortening the prison sentences so that we can save state money, and then taking that money and looking for ways to get it out to crime victims and those most in need of trauma recovery help, that's the kind of combination that could really put Michigan at the forefront of the nation in terms of smart justice.
Thanks, Lenore. And now we're going to turn our attention to James McCurtis, who is the director of the Crime Victim Services Programs throughout Michigan. You kind of heard Lenore mention that the victims of crime, the one thing that they need is kind of help in knowing where to turn. So can you help us point us in the right direction?
Sure. A lot of times when a person is a victim of a crime, the first person that they come into contact with is a police officer, and police officers direct them to what we call victim advocates. Victim advocates are located in the prosecutor attorney's offices. So depending on what county you're in, a lot of times you will be guided to a victim advocate in the prosecuting attorney's office.
So that would be pretty much your first step of getting help.
Absolutely. And if a police officer doesn't, you know, point you in that direction, then it's important for a victim to contact their prosecuting attorney's office so they can get in touch with a victim advocate. And then when they sit down with a victim advocate, and that's exactly what they are advocating for that victim. They are to lay out all the various resources that are available to that person to help them with their recovery from whatever particular crime that they have endured. And victim advocates are, you know, paid for through a grant from our office. So they will point victims to our office to help them get compensation benefits. They will point them to different nonprofit organizations that can help them with housing if needed, or some type of a counseling service that's needed, medical services. So there's a whole array of resources that are available to victims, and a lot of times victim advocates help them through that process.
And what about helping them through the court system? I know the court system can be very difficult and hard to navigate your way through if you're not familiar with it, and it can be overwhelming. Is there anyone to help them kind of get through that if they have to go to court for any reason?
Absolutely, Brooke, and that's and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the primary task of a victim advocate, and that's why they're located in a prosecuting attorney's office. Victim advocates, not only do they help victims with resources for all those various things I talked about earlier, but they also help them navigate through the court system. So they will walk them through the process, to a point where they break it down so that the victim understands exactly what is going on, and that the victim understands what his or her rights are at that time.
So if anyone was out there and they had just been victimized, so to speak, and really didn't know where to turn, and say the crime had already happened, maybe a few weeks ago, maybe even a month or so ago, is there a statute on this of when they could actually get help?
If there's a person who's been victimized and it's been and the crime has happened, you know, a while ago, they can still file for compensation benefits with us and with our office here in the Department of Health and Human Services. You know, you have a year to apply for compensation benefits, but that could be waived if there is a just reason why you couldn't, apply for those benefits beforehand. And again, I recommend that they call our office and also still get in contact with the victim advocate in their county, in their county prosecutor, in their prosecuting attorney's office, so that way they can work with us in terms of applying for compensation benefits, and work with advocates to help them, work with an advocate to help them get other resources that are available to that victim.
And what about the victim advocate? Are they confidential? I know some people might be kind of worried about that, as far as, you know, there might be some confidentiality.
Sure.
Issues.
Oh, yes. If there's a confidentiality issue, if there's a matter where a person wants to keep certain things confidential, they can work with that advocate in doing that. I mean, there's HIPAA laws that are out there that protect victims, especially when it comes to their medical needs. If there's a person who's a victim of sexual assault or domestic violence, that victim advocate can work with them and talk with them about the things that are that can be kept confidential. A lot of times, if you are working with a prosecuting attorney's office and they want to prosecute, then that victim advocate can go, again, can talk about the rights that that victim has when it comes to being confidential.
Is it an 800 number that people could call?
Absolutely. For our office, they can call, there are two numbers. You can call the local number, which is 517-373-7373. And there's a toll-free number for victims to call, 1-877-251-7373. And again, that's for our office, and we will help guide that person to which advocate they should speak with if they're not sure. But if they are familiar with their county and the county prosecutor's office, I suggest that they call their office as well to get even more resources.
Okay, thank you so much again. I'm speaking with James McCurtis, director of the Crime Victim Service Program throughout Michigan. And thank you so much, James, for joining us and telling us how victims of crime can get help.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, because we really want people to call these numbers and get in contact with their advocate, get in contact with us if they are a victim of a crime, so that we can give them the help that they deserve to survive any type of crime that they endured.
For Current State, I'm Brooke Allen.
Mary Flower performing live here on Current State's Live Music Friday. Tell us the name of that one, Mary.
That one is a tune of mine called The Ruckus Rag.
The Ruckus Rag on the new CD.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
Mary dropped off a copy of it here right in front of the console. When my Bluebird Sings,
yes,
is the name of the new CD.
When My Bluebird Sings, The Ruckus Rag.
The Ruckus Rag, exactly. It's one of 13 tracks on her new CD. We'll learn more about it in just a little bit here on WKAR's Current State. This Sunday, Hawk Island Park in Lansing may look a little like Hong Kong Harbor, minus the supertankers. The annual Capital City Dragon Boat Race comes to the park for the first time. About a dozen teams of 20 people apiece will compete in 40-foot-long boats affixed with ornate Chinese dragon heads. The race is a fundraiser for the Women's Center of Greater Lansing. Current State's Kevin Lavery met up with two dragon boat team captains. First, Kevin spoke with Terry Police. That's where it came from. She leads the Dirty Oars, a ragtag squad that fancies itself more as pirates than paddlers. She explains how she fell in love with this ancient sport.
What piqued my interest is I always loved to be on the waters. I love boating, I love sailing, and I was looking for things to do that I can have fun and still keep it within reason of the budget. And I happened to find the Capital City Dragon Boat doing it, and I said, I want in. And it was something that was affordable, was staying in the area, and meet new people.
How many teams are competing this year?
Last I heard, it's about 12 teams. There's going to be 3 divisions, and we're still trying to get everything all together. We've met up at the Hawk Island for where we're going to set up and where we unload. And I think it's going to be around 250 to 300 meters that we really paddle.
These boats are about 40 feet long. There's about 20 or 22 people typically to
20.
A boat. 20, okay. That would be 18 paddlers. One person is on the stern. The other person is calling in the front, and they're the drummer. Now, as the captain, are you at the bow or the stern?
I'm usually part of the rowers. Being deaf myself, I tend to be strategically toward the front so I can help developing that cadence. We have the engine, the stronger people in the back. We have a drummer to help keep us all in sync and cadence. And we also have the flag person that's going to grab the flag. It's fantastic. You have to come out and join us, join the team, join spectating.
I was going to ask you about your hearing situation. You have a cochlear implant.
Yes.
Is it more challenging then to be able to hear the commands and to be in sync with your other teammates, or is it really a matter of feel? You're watching them and you get into a rhythm because you can just kind of feel it around you without actually having to hear the commands.
It is challenging, but I've learned to try to triangulate because you also have to watch your other people paddling, feel the beat. So it is more challenging for the deaf when you have to triangulate everything. But I also have strong people around me to keep me in sync with them.
I'm talking with Terry Police, who is the captain of the Dirty Oars Dragon Boat Team, and the Capital City Dragon Boat Race happens this Sunday at Hawk Island County Park. We are downtown in Lansing at the Lansing City Market. We are right next to the Grand River, and I asked you to meet me here because this was the scene of at least one of your team's victories. I believe that was last year. What special memories do you have about this particular stretch of the river when it comes to dragon boating?
Well, every year has been different, but this year, last year actually, was also great because we ended up grabbing a pedestrian onto our boat for the race. And we actually was able to get gold again. First year with bronze, gold, and then last year with gold again. And everybody, it's a team effort. We're all paddling in sync, in cadence, and just being here in the heart of Lansing, that's really always special.
About 4 years ago, I actually had the pleasure of going out on the river early in the morning around this time of year with Rob Flanders.
Yes.
At the time, he was captaining Team Dragonheart. And when I got on his boat, it was really a workout, and I expected
yes,
nothing less. Here's a little bit of that.
We assemble in the boat
life vests on, paddles at the ready, and in my case, a microphone and camera too. Standing commandingly at the stern, Flanders starts us off with a warm-up.
All right, paddles up, take her away.
Ten paddles ply the waters as one. It's all in the shoulders, not the arms. Good rotation is the key. I forget that, and my forearms are paying for it. Flanders watches our technique and spurs us on.
Right. Open, open, rotate, and open that heart to the center. Yeah, nice, Rachel. Open the heart to the center.
As he steers us beneath a bridge, Flanders wants more effort. He calls for a power stroke.
Power in. 3, 2, 1.
For a moment, we seem to be racing the train that shudders by off our starboard side. After an hour, our run is over.
Nice practice, Dragonheart. Woo! Nice practice.
Do you know Rob Flanders? He's kind of a legend in this area.
Yes, he is. He is a favorite pirate. He is a favorite camaraderie. I do look forward to his expertise. His wife, Joanna, is also doing dragon boat instructions, you know. But I look for inspiration through Rob because he is fantastic in what he does.
Terry Police is the captain of the Dirty Oars team in this year's dragon boat race that'll be held Sunday at Hawk Island County Park in Lansing. Terry, best of luck, and sounds like a lot of fun.
You need to join our team, too. We'll have to kidnap you and be part of our team.
What did I get myself into?
A lot. when it comes with us, we take everything and anything.
One of Terry Police's competitors this year at Hawk Island is Sarah Schreiber. She's a 24-year veteran of the Michigan Farm Bureau Insurance Company, and she's the captain of a team called One Fun Bureau.
I think this is our third or fourth year. And got a lot of excited people, so it's going to be a good weekend.
Are you a native Michigander, Sarah?
Well, yes and no. I've lived here since I was 8, so most of my life, but I was born in Wisconsin.
Close enough. That means you have spent at least an hour of your life at some point in your life in a canoe.
I have. When I was younger, my mom took us out, and I've been out canoeing since then. But obviously, this is totally different than being in a canoe. So.
And that was my question. What it is that appealed to you about dragon boating and why you made the leap? I mean, it's a much larger boat, many more people. You know, a lot of people like to canoe in this state, and this is a different animal altogether.
It is. I mean, you know, it's not about who's the fittest. It's about the team that works together the best. You can have, you know, 10-year-old Girl Scouts paddling together versus the MSU football team, and they're all paddling however they feel like. The Girl Scouts are going to win. So it's about teamwork, and, you know, it's a lot of fun figuring out where you're going to be in the boat and who's going to paddle, who's going to do the drum, who's going to be the flag catcher. And, you know, people get really into it, like, so-and-so's got to be in front. And they just get really, really excited because those are the pace setters in front. And people just gravitate toward it because you don't really need a whole lot of practice, and you don't need your own boat because they're supplying it.
That said, though, Sarah, do you have a technique that you and your team have perfected? And I'm not asking you to reveal any trade secrets here before Sunday, but, you know, it's something that, is there maybe a distinctive style that we should be looking for when we're out there looking for One Fun Bureau?
Well, I hate to say it, but probably not. We're kind of a wing it team, and I think a lot of the teams just kind of wing it. I mean, we only do this once a year. And, you know, you've got people, you know, you want your stronger people in the front so they can keep the pace. And if you can sink, you'll do well.
That would be S-Y-N-C, not S-I-N-K.
Correct. We don't want to do S-I-N-K. But if we do, thankfully, everyone's going to be wearing a life jacket and there's going to be a safety boat out there. But it's very hard to tip these boats. They're 1,200 pounds.
See, words matter in radio. And so we have to have the right definition of sink.
Right, for sure. No, nobody's going to sink. And nobody's even come close. We've got experienced Stearns people. And they take care of it. Hawk Island, obviously, is a man-made lake. We're not going to have any waves. Hopefully the Loch Ness Monster won't be there, but you never know.
Sarah Schreiber is the captain of One Fun Bureau, which is the Michigan Farm Bureau Insurance team. They and about 10 or 12 others, I believe, 12. Well, 12, will be participating in this year's Capital City Dragon Boat Race. It's in a new venue this year. It's at Hawk Island County Park in Lansing. The actual race begins, I believe it's 8:30 in the morning on Sunday?
Yep, 8:30 is kind of, we've got the national anthem. And in fact, one of my coworkers, Sam Dan, is going to be singing the national anthem, so that's kind of cool. And then we have the Awaken the Dragon ceremony, and then at 9 o'clock, racing begins. One thing we want to mention is the Lansing Marathon is coming through, so if you come to see us, you can see some marathoners as well. But be careful coming into the park so you don't hit any of them.
Good advice. Two for the price of one.
Right, exactly. Two big sporting events happening in Lansing at the same time.
Very good. Sarah, thanks so much for your time, and best of luck on the water on Sunday.
Hey, thanks a lot. We hope to have a lot of fun. Go One Fun Bureau.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
And you are listening to Current State on a Live Music Friday today. Mary Flower is a Portland, Oregon-based acoustic blues guitar player and singer, and she hosts a guitar camp out there. She's been at it a long time. She's created a series of instructional DVDs, and so she's pretty much done it all, and she performs tonight at the Michigan Blues Fest in Old Town. Let's hear Mary perform Hey Baby, Where You Been?
Baby, where you been when you should have been here with me? There's a cold, cold seat at the head of the table where my coulda, shoulda used to be. Said, hey, hey, baby, now, baby, where you been when you should have been home tonight? There's a cold, cold plate of steak and potatoes. What happened to your appetite? There's ice and snow coming down, bound to get much colder. That ain't nothing compared to your cold shoulder. Hey, hey, now, baby, where you been when you should have been here with me? There's no fire to keep me warm, and that wood pile's about to freeze. Alone since my honey baby took to Rome. I'm a local fool, I'm out on a limb, still thinking that he might come home. Hey, hey, baby, I'm howling at the moon, I haven't seen the sun in days. You know, love is blind, I lose my mind when you treat me this way. Yes, I sense snow coming down, bound to get much colder, but that ain't nothing compared to your cold shoulder. Hey, hey, now, baby, where you been when you should have been here with me? There's no fire to keep me warm, and that wood pile's about to freeze. Yeah.
Mary Flower on Live Music Friday here on WKAR's Current State. She'll be performing this evening at 6 at the Michigan Blues Fest in Old Town, Lansing. And then she's off to a couple more Michigan performances here before she escapes the state. And we'll talk about those in just a few minutes here. Your bio says you are a Midwest native. Where'd you grow up?
I am. I grew up in a little town in the middle of Indiana. And actually, my older sister, I had five siblings. My older sister went to Michigan State back in the old days.
How about that?
And yeah, it's really great to be here. And You've I feel like town? I am like being a Midwesterner coming back. It's really wonderful.
You've been to Lansing before, I understand.
Yes, I have.
And you did a workshop at Elderly Instruments, so that means you're a real musician.
Well, I hope so. teaching is about half of what I do, so it's an important part to pass this music along.
You made your way to Denver, and you live today in Portland, Oregon. How did the westward migration begin for you?
Well, I hear the big one is coming, and I didn't want to miss it. I wanted to be there for the big one. So I continue to move west. And I was in Denver for about 30 years, and just my son was out in at Lewis and Clark College, and I would go visit him, and I fell in love with the whole area out there. It's a beautiful, beautiful town. Lots of music, lots of art. It's a wonderful place to be.
I imagine you tell your friends in Denver, though, you're leaving Denver, and they say, why would you ever leave a city like this?
Well, I miss my friends, and I was just there for playing. I was there for about 5 days, and there was a big party of all the old friends. And yeah, that's the hardest part, is leaving your longtime friends.
Yeah.
Very hard.
Tell us about first picking up the guitar.
First picking up the guitar? Well, first I was picking up a ukulele.
Okay.
When I was about 11, my sister, who went to school here, brought one home, and it was all the craze. It was so easy to play, and I begged and begged until I got a guitar. I spent most of my teenage years in front of the record player, dropping the needle back and forth, trying to figure out what was that chord they were playing there.
Yeah.
And then I went to school at Indiana University, and there was a great folklore department there, as well as the jazz school and everything else. And there I began to see the deep roots of the music I was listening to, and I knew I was sold.
What kind of records were on that turntable that you used to play around
with? Well, you know, it was all I could get my hands on at the time. It was the commercial stuff. It was the Peter, Paul, and Mary and Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and the stuff that everybody was listening to. But, mm-hmm. you know, the roots go deeper than that. And Reverend Gary Davis had songs that were recorded by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And that's the kind of stuff I love, is the Piedmont-style blues, which I've been more and more attracted to. And with its syncopation, its alternating thumb, and it's challenging and fun to listen to, upbeat, yeah.
We're joined also in the studio here by Bluesfest organizer Terry Terry of the Old Town-based communications firm Message Makers. Welcome back, Terry.
Hey, glad to be here.
Good to see you. You got a busy weekend in store here. What makes a successful Bluesfest?
Oh, man. Well,
a whole lot of people, I imagine,
first
of all.
You have a lot of volunteers. It takes hundreds of volunteers. I look at our volunteers as our number one sponsor. But it's really, you know, bringing people together, a good selection of a variety of genres of blues. Mike Scorry does a wonderful job helping us put that together in the Capillary Blues Society. But it goes deeper, because really it's why do we do this? And
tell us why.
I'm going to do that. We can't underestimate the power of the arts. And way back, many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, a group of us artists got together, opened some little in this beat-up part of town that was known as North Lansing. We fixed up some studio space, had some studios, opened a couple little galleries, added some poetry to our openings, and then some music. And then the next thing we knew, we were doing a jazz fest and a blues fest. Mm-hmm. And that part of town, we renamed it Old Town, and it's transformed and it continues to transform. But it's through the arts that all of this happened.
And I'm curious, I want to ask you, I mean, you've invested in Old Town, time, energy, commitment. You have really put your heart into making so many things happen in Old Town. How do you make Old Town even more special? Do you ever think about that?
We do. So I'm thinking about our mission here. You know, like our mission has been this, because it's rooted in the mission of the Michigan Institute for Contemporary Art. It's to create an open space where people can come together, meet old friends, make new friends, and in the context of the arts, have conversations about how we can make a better community. And as long as we continue to do that, we make it better in many different ways when we're getting more people engaged in the conversations. And it's in the context of the arts, the blues, the jazz fest, and so forth.
Happens this evening. It gets started at 5 o'clock Friday. Deacon Earl and the congregation, past live music Friday performers here on on Current State. Mary Flower follows at 6 o'clock, and then it's a full lineup starting at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Kids Beat events in city parking lot number 56 from 1 till 5 p.m. on Saturday. Let's let Mary Flower stretch her legs here a little bit with another song. What would you like to play, Mary?
Well, this is one that has no title, which tells you it's pretty new. I'll let you title it if you'd like to put a title on this.
Put it on Facebook, and we could help you with that. So
we'll think about it.
Don't tempt us. Mary Flower performing live here on Current State's Live Music Friday. Your lengthy list of appearances, live appearances, includes a Prairie Home Companion.
Oh, yeah.
How do you get on that show?
Not easy.
Did you reach out? You reached out to them?
No. Well, it's a long story, but when they came to the state of Colorado when I was living there, and they did a show from Durango, and they needed a Colorado person, and many of us, I think, reached out, and many are called, but few are chosen. Mm. So I got lucky, and it was a pretty wonderful experience. Pat Donahue is a good friend of mine, the guy who used to play guitar for 20 years for Garrison Keillor in the All-Star Shoe Band. But that is no longer. Big changes coming up for Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Thiele.
Yeah.
About to take
who lives
show.
In Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Downbeat Magazine praised your finger-style guitar and your lap slide playing. For the non-guitar players listening, explain what those styles are.
Fingerstyle is exactly what you've been hearing all morning from me. My lap slide instrument is in the car, I'll work on that tonight. It's my sort of version of bottleneck-style blues, only it's played on a flat-top guitar on my lap, as they call it, Hawaiian style.
Okay.
And I do a lot of blues on that instrument.
We're talking with Mary Flower, a guitarist and singer who will perform tonight at the Michigan Blues Fest in Old Town Lansing. You can see her there this evening at 6 o'clock. Terry, chief organizer and the head of the Michigan Institute for Contemporary Art also joins us, the chief organizer of the Blues Fest. You're always working on something new, Terry. What are you working on right now?
So there's some new, when you come to Old Town, you're going to see some new stuff. So if you go, there's a little alleyway where our building is, where the Arts Council is, and we've taken 20-plus years of Jazz and Blues Fest artwork from our posters, that fine art that we've had, and put together a collage that's just off the charts amazing. And that was done through the help of Habitat for Humanity, O'Leary's, and Reach Art Studios.
And you are responsible for some of that artwork.
I've shown a little bit of my art in some of these posters, yes.
You got it. You got some of your work that's going to be on public view this Saturday, tomorrow, 4 to 8 p.m. in the Old Town Professional Building.
Yep, 1129 North Washington. That's new. We also have Ozone Brew House, a microbrewery that's opened up on the north side of Turner Street, up a couple blocks, so you want to check that out. Urban Beat Event Center, which I think is going to become the new premier performance space in Lansing. You
Urban
want to see
Beat.
Urban Beat. Right on Turner Street, right in front of the festival. And Friday night, tonight, we've got a band inside the beer tent as a little bonus, Champagne and the Motor City Blues Crew, and they're just off the charts. I love them. So.
The Michigan Blues Fest begins Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, runs until midnight or thereabouts, and it kicks off again 2 o'clock on Saturday. Again, in Old Town, Lansing. And Mary, you've got more Michigan performances after you wrap up here at the Blues Fest.
I do, yes. I'll be at the Franke Center for the Arts in Marshall, Michigan, tomorrow night, I believe. And then Sunday night I'll be at a house concert in Ann Arbor, the Kaylee House Concerts. And if you want to check that out, that you can find that on Facebook or on my website, maryflower.com.
Talk to us here a little bit about your band camp. It sounds like a lot of work, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
It's not really a band camp.
I didn't mean to say that.
Different.
The social media thing,
yeah.
Band camp, was rattling through my skull.
Sure. I've taught at so many guitar camps for grown-ups through the years. Some of the big ones, Centrum in Port Townsend, Augusta in West Virginia, Augusta Heritage Center. Swannanoa in North Carolina. There are a lot of them, and they're very popular, and they're a wonderful place for people to go immerse themselves in music. So I started my own camp 3 years ago up the Columbia River Gorge from Portland, and we have 50 students and four teachers this year, Ernie Hawkins, Steve James, Susie Thompson, and myself. And it's going to be great. It's a great place. It's a five-day experience, and I'm looking forward to it. It's coming right up at the end of September.
Mary Flower's latest CD, the latest of 10, is called When My Bluebird Sings. It's a beautiful package, and you've heard at least one. You heard the Ruckus Rag earlier
yeah.
in this hour. Do you ever depart from the acoustic blues? I mean, is there a power pop band in your history that you try to
Not
keep
really.
Secret?
There are some guys that I play with back home who played with Fritz Richmond, who was the jug player with the Jim Queskin Jug Band years ago. And they're a great, quirky bunch of guys, and I love playing with them. And it's a string band, but we do kind of jug band, bluesy, really swingy stuff, all kinds of, we're all over the map. And those, I don't really depart. I'm not in a blues band playing electric guitar. That takes a whole different touch that I don't have.
Okay.
I have too heavy a touch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's who I play with back home.
Mary Flower, tonight, 6 p.m., and it's all kind of the brainchild of our other guest, Terry, the organizer of the Michigan Blues Fest. Anything else our listeners need to know about the festival? We got about 30 seconds.
Just be there. Come out. Make some new friends. Have a good time.
Yeah. It's kind of the place to be in the summertime or in the warm. When the snow isn't flying, Old Town is definitely the place to be with all of the music festivals. And you can learn more about Mary Flower, everything about Mary at maryflower.com. I'm going to let Mary play us out after I remind our listeners that coming up Monday on Current State, we welcome guest host Mickey Hurton to the show. Mickey, of course, associate publisher of the Lansing City Pulse, a pretty frequent guest on this program. As I take a little bit of break from the program, we hope you can join us then. We want to say goodbye to Terry, and we're going to let Mary Flower play us out here on Current State. Have a great weekend. Nice to meet you, Mary.
You
when my bluebird sings and the sun lights up the day. When my bluebird sings and the sun lights up the day. Yes, early in the morning, I watch all my blues fade away. Well, there's sugar in the pantry, and there's apples in the bin. Sugar in the pantry, apples in the bin. Honey's so sweet, come on back in my arms once again.